Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Boston restaurateur and culinary superstar Tiffany Faison made history last month. She won Season 3 of the Food Network's Tournament of Champions and the biggest Food Network prize ever. Now, if you have tasted her food before, that may not be shocking. In fact, here is how Faison herself and hosts Guy Fieri and Simon Majumdar described a cauliflower sauce in the competition that she needed to be very velvety.
You know what that is? Velvety.
I know.
Gangster.
I think if I ever leave my wife, it'll be for that cauliflower sauce.
So we caught up with Faison while she was, get this, in Louisville, Kentucky, cooking for the Kentucky Derby. And we talked about her numerous second-place finishes, what it meant to finally win, as well as Boston's reputation within the culinary community and what the future of the city's food scene could and should look like. But we did start by reliving that moment when she was announced as the winner of the Tournament of Champions.
Ladies and gentlemen, fans of TOC3, the winner of the Tournament of Champions between B-Dub, Chef Brooke Williamson, and Sweet Tea, Chef Tiffany Faison, is...
So take us there. So there's this moment, right? They flash your name up on the big screen. Guy Fieri says your name. Which came first? Did you see it on the screen first or did you hear it? How did it sink in?
I honestly don't know. First of all, it never gets old. like every time I hear it, I'm like, oh, this is really like I have a moment where I was like, who wins? It's me. I don't know. I've honestly, it's such a blur. Like I definitely remember standing there. I remember thinking, I just don't want to come in second again. I remember just really like preparing myself to not win. And then it was just, I think I saw my name up. And then I remember Guy saying, Tiffany Faison wins, kind of around this. It was surreal. I don't know. Blur.
So
best blur ever.
You were pretty real on the show. And you said, you just said this, and I'm going to play you a little more sound of you saying it on the show too. You know, I've done a lot of seconds, so here you are.
There's so much about coming in second in my career, and I'm grateful for all the opportunities that I've gotten, but there's just this, I've had this inability to, like, break through, like, a really big battle, like, a really big competition, a really big win, and I want this.
So you've said it never gets old. You've had a few weeks to sit with it now. Does it mean to you as much as you thought it was going to mean to you?
Yes, it does. You know, it's interesting because I think in some ways these are so giant, the moments, you know, competition like this. And then, you know, I get perspective and I'm like, it's a game show and it's, you know, but it really is as much as both of those things, it's the culmination of all the work that I've put into my career. Like you don't just show up on a show like this and succeed without really doing the work. So, you know, when I have moments where I'm like, oh, girl, relax, it's not that big of a deal, I bring myself back to like, yeah, actually it is a big deal and it's okay to celebrate yourself. So, it does mean as much as I thought it would. Yeah.
It's a game show, but it's also a skill show. And,
yes.
You know, at the end, you're holding this big belt. It looks like you've just come out of a heavyweight title.
And you, 'cause I have.
Yeah. And you're knocking on it and you're like, this is mine, baby. Did it change your sense of how good you are to win? Or did it just validate what you already knew about how good you were?
Wow, that's a question that I can't answer well either way. I don't think I have a sense of like, oh my God, I'm so good at this. I don't feel that way. I feel like I can have a great day, have a tough day. And that's one of the really interesting things about TOC. Everyone there can win and everyone there is beatable. So it's just really about putting five great days together.
With some really, really hard requirements. So listeners may not know, you get this sort of random assignment of food ingredients and ways you have to prepare it and equipment you have to use. And you got some really gnarly stuff in the final, including like this anti-griddle, which freezes things instead of cooking them. Was there a moment where you thought, I don't even know how to put my brain around. I mean, you had 60 minutes to figure out how to do this.
Yeah, and cook it all. You have to.
Yeah.
That's the fear, right, is that whatever this is, like whether it's TOC or Chopped, or when the challenge is put in front of you, the fear for me is that my head will just go blank. It hasn't happened yet. I hope to God it doesn't. No, you just work through it. I didn't know how I was going to use the anti-griddle. I knew kind of what I would do with the rabbit. I was able to kind of work through the natto as I continued to cook. But the anti-griddle was a little bit of like a giant question mark. And then as I sort of started cooking through my dish, I figured out, okay, you can make the chilies like less. I can, you know, essentially take some of the heat out of the chilies by freezing them. And I can reverse caramelize my rabbit. I can do things with this anti-griddle. The truth is we've had an anti-griddle on Chopped for years, and we finally threw it away
because no one could use it. So just for listeners, natto is this kind of fermented soybean concoction. And you were talking about chilies because you made a crepao that, and you use the anti-griddle to get some of the bite out of that. So here's this other thing, and we will talk about some other things, but this was fascinating to watch you go through this journey because you did kind of go back and forth between brash confidence and I'm not going to make this. So I want to set this one up. It's the morning of the final. You meet your competitor, Brooke, outside. It looks like you guys are outside your trailers. Mm-hmm. You're hugging each other. And while you're hugging her, you have this exchange.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Ready to go down?
Ready to go. Good luck to you.
Down. I said go down.
No.
So was that bravado? Was that trash talk? Or were you really two Tiffanys, the one that sometimes thought you were going to win this and the one that sometimes was in your own head?
Yeah, I think we're all multiple people within the same person. It's all of that, right? It's trash talk. I love Brooke. We've been friends for years. I also wanted to get in her head a little bit. You know, like she wins everything. The woman just sails through. She's an assassin. She just sails through things and like wins. So there was a part of me that, yeah, wanted to get in her head a little bit, but also, you know, just having fun and poking. And no part of me is like, yeah, Brooke, I'm going to take you down so hard. Like I did. No, I didn't think that at all. It's more me trying to get in her head and just having some fun.
Well, and her laughter did kind of suggest that she knew the space that the two of you were in. I do want to back up. You know, she's won a lot of stuff. You've competed in a lot of stuff in the Food mm-hmm. Network, Top Chef contestant in the first season back in 2006. You came in second there. Mm-hmm. You were painted as a bit of villain on the show. There's been, I mean, that has been talked about ad infinitum, right, for the mm-hmm. last 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at it now, though, looking back, I do want to ask you, given what we know now about how women are treated, how women mm-hmm. in the culinary world are treated, do you think you were set up as a trope? And do you think you'd be set up the same way if it were now?
That's a great question that no one's ever asked me. I do think I was set up in some ways. I also let myself play right into it. So I accept responsibility for as harsh as I was around a lot of things. I was also young and insecure and not making excuses. But yeah, I played right into it. As you said, understand women differently now, not as well as we should, but we understand women a little bit differently now. We understand chefs differently now. So do I think it would have been the same now? No. I also think Top Chef has never really come to terms with how they treated women for a long time. They've never really had a moment and talked about it. They've changed how they portray, how they edit. But they've never, it bothers me a little bit that there's never been a moment of like, hey, we got this wrong.
So you were the woman people love to hate. Mm-hmm. We fast forward to 2022. Boston loves you. And I want to talk about that a little bit. We aren't necessarily known as a culinary capital here in Boston.
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Do you feel like you won this for Boston at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Boston's been my home for the better part of 20 years. I started cooking here. And so there is a part of me, the weight of not just winning this for me, winning it for my team, winning it for my city, bringing this home. Yes, absolutely. Like we, I've been so blessed to have developed a relationship with the city and the people of Boston. And, you know, Boston can be tough. And when I tell you, I've been entirely embraced and loved by the city, and I feel it every day, and I'm so grateful for it. So yeah, this is also so much for Boston.
So I would take from that then that if I asked you, do you think you won because you were lifted up from here or in spite of the fact that you were here? Sounds like you'd say you felt lifted up.
Lifted up, absolutely. There is no in spite of being from Boston. Anyone who feels that way misses the city and gets us wrong. Lifted up for sure.
And who's lifted you up the most?
Wow. My family, my friends, I know that's sort of my team lifts me up every damn day. They hold it down and allow me to come do things like this and to have a life that, you know, brings a lot to our businesses and brings attention to our businesses, but also they allow me to have a life that, that lights us all up. And I never take that for granted. So, first and foremost, my team.
So you have more than a half dozen restaurants. How long were you away? How long did that many people have to keep everything going here while you were gone?
2 weeks. So it's actually, it shoots faster than it looks. The beginning of it is when there's 32 people, you get through the first round, and then essentially I had nearly a week off. People who don't win go home, and then you come back and the pace picks up a little bit to when you get to the end, it's like, cook. Like it's an adrenaline high and then a dump and a high and then a dump. So it's 2 weeks.
Did you nap for like 2 days afterwards?
It's so funny. I had a friend of mine that was sort of coaching me through it. I mean, the most bizarre things happen to your body that you just, you really get in a space where you're like, please don't leave me. Like, don't pass out. Don't crumble. The morning of the finale, I was so cold. I couldn't get warm. Mm. And I remember speaking to her, and she's a therapist, and she's like, well, your body thinks it's going to die. Start there. You're not going to die. Back up. So, after it, I spent some time with Guy and some friends. And then the next 2 days I was dead, high, but dead.
Guy Fieri being the host of of the show. All right, let's come back to Boston here. How would you describe the food scene here in Boston today?
Well, I think it's tough now. I think we've had everyone's had a couple of devastating years. So, and what those years have meant to chefs and restaurants and how they've culminated in what we're doing now, I think has been really tough for a lot of us. Our menus are smaller because we have less staff and things are more difficult. Things are harder to execute. And so there's challenges that we have, we're dealing with post pandemic that I don't think are fair to the description of the city as a culinary bastion, because I do think we are. And, I think we're ever evolving. I think we are steadfast and strong and stubborn in some ways. We're really good at sprinting and then taking a second and kind of slowing down and looking around and reevaluating. I think we're sometimes self-conscious food-wise. We are, at our core, I think we play for the people that live here. And so when we have audiences that let us run and jump, we can. And sometimes that shows up and sometimes it's harder. So ever evolving.
And are we at a level of sort of diversity and quality of options and talent here that we weren't at the beginning of your career, or are we just more aware of it now?
We are not as far as we should be. Look, there's not enough people of color cooking in our city with marquee, restaurant names that are recognized, and we should be. We're a city that is built on the talent and backs of women, and I would still say there's not enough women. I think sometimes we get in a clique of things that work, and we grind that down a little harder than we should instead of really pushing boundaries. I would love to see more ethnically diverse food. I would love to see more people of color really pushing the boundaries and celebrated in the city. That is still to come. I think that's still happening, but we're slower to start than we should be. So yes, both, right? Like, we're more aware of ourselves, but also we are still, we are pushing more than we ever have.
So let me give you an invitation to give a couple of shout outs. Is there a chef of color out there who's producing food that you just are a huge fan of?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a few. Seiji Amora at Cafe Sushi, I think, is one of the best chefs in the city. I just think he is the bee's knees. It's some of the best sushi in the country. They're not seating in the dining room right now, but they're doing takeout, and it's worth it. It's worth all your money and your time. So he's one of my favorites. I think about Douglas Williams at Mita is killing the game. Like, he's been, and I think been recognized nationally. He was nominated for Best Chef on the long list for the Beard Awards. So there are definitely people out there that we're starting to recognize and see, but more.
And
more
a woman?
Spaces,
give us
time.
A woman, too.
I would say, I mean, Cassie Puima is amazing. She runs Sarma. Everyone knows how good she is. I don't know why she is not winning a James Beard Award this year. She was not on the list, and I can't for the life of me figure out why. I'd like to burn it all down. When I did not see her name on the list, I wanted to burn it all down.
What do you think comes next for culinary innovation here?
I don't think right now is about culinary innovation. I think right now is about recognizing the things in our industry that need to change and can and should, and taking this moment as, it's never going to be a panacea, but taking a moment to fix some of the things that are really broken. I think it's a lot about holding it together right now and just trying to operate. There are multiple layers of what has happened in the past years that we're dealing with. And I think I speak for my company, but also probably for a lot of other restaurants out there, when we have been living in the, like, if we can just get through this, if we can just get through this next, if we can just make it through the next, and we are tired. We're all living there. Or if we can just get through the next, get, you know, hire this next person or make it to the, it's, I don't think anyone's like in a world in restaurants right now where we're lamenting how much fun we're having. So I think right now it's just about rebuilding and holding on and getting through this,
you know,
whatever this manifests to.
I want to pick up on that idea of being tired. And I'm actually going to go back to some sound from Tournament of Champions where you talk about what you've weathered and you talk pretty openly about it. Here it is.
Personally, it's been a really, really rough couple of years. I was married for 8 years. I had a divorce. I just turned around and, like, my life was gone. And my life was my restaurants and my wife, and that was gone. Just felt like everything in my life changed without my consent. And now the divorce is done. It's freed me up to be here again and to feel good about myself and to, like, be in an arena that I love being in.
I think many people would are you okay? I think many people would respond, you know, at a gut level to that idea that in the last couple of years, our lives changed in ways nobody signed up for.
Yeah.
What was the hardest part of that for you, and where did you draw your strength from to weather it while it was weathering you?
While it was weathering me is a great way to say it. My marriage started to fall apart at the end of 2019, and I remember all of us sitting around one of my restaurants and saying, well, it can't get worse. Never say that out loud. And it just went from that to COVID to what the hell is happening? Like, how does everything just fall through fingers? And that was, I think, the culmination of it, of just, like, I felt I couldn't run myself out of it, and I couldn't, and usually I can find an angle or a way through or a fix. And that's my job as someone that owns a company. And I couldn't, I couldn't fix the fact that I had been left for someone that worked in our company in front of everyone. I couldn't fix the fact that there was a pandemic and we were closing restaurants and couldn't safely serve our guests. There was nothing I could fix. So I think for me, there was a lot of lessons that I learned in the powerlessness that I faced about what it means and how restorative it can be to sit in the not knowing and to sit in the not doing and get comfortable with things that are extraordinarily difficult.
But you didn't curl up. Some people would have just curled up. Where did that strain?
I didn't have an option.
There it is.
Like, what's the option? That I just leave my life on the side of the road?
Yeah.
There's never been a give up option in my life ever. I don't know where it comes from. I came from a mom who doesn't give up. And what happens when I give up? What happens? everything that I've worked for, just what falls to the side, I'm going to go get a job making sandwiches somewhere. Like, I don't, it's just never been an option.
All right, let's go to a happy place, which
let's
is
do that.
Louisville, Kentucky, where we're pre-taping this conversation with you because you couldn't join us in studio because you're cooking at the Derby. Is that like for you or really cool?
No, so cool. So cool. This is actually my eighth year. We do the Taste of the Derby, which supports Dare to Care, which is an organization that feeds people here in Kentucky. And today is the Oaks. It's all about celebrating women that have been survivors of breast and ovarian cancer. When I tell you it is, we haven't been here for a couple of years for obvious reasons. It feels so celebratory, and the energy is just extraordinary. It is never lost on me. I know that this is just one of those moments and events that is part of the American lexicon. It is a bucket list moment. I'm grateful to be here every time.
What are you cooking?
Last night we did the Taste of the Derby, and I did a Gulf shrimp, sort of spicy alla vodka fra diavola sauce with an olive oil fried crostini.
All right. So you closed Tiger Mama last fall. For folks who may not have been familiar with it, Eater Boston called it your love letter to Southeast Asian cuisines. You did it to open another restaurant in its place. You haven't told anybody yet what's taking its place. Do you want to tell us?
Not yet.
Oh, when will we know?
It'll happen this summer. So you will know, I would say within a month or so, people will know.
All right. And any future plans involving the Food Network?
Yes, actually, I just finished shooting a show called Beachside Brawl with Brooke and Antonia, and so that'll come out this summer. A bunch of Guy's Grocery Games in the can that you'll see, shooting ranch next week, Guy's Ranch Kitchen, Always Chopped. There's lots of stuff out there.
All right.
My bosses at the Food Network are keeping me busy.
And the most exciting thing for you on your docket for the next 6 months?
Oh, just being able to live life a little freer. I don't know that there's one thing singularly that, there's a lot of stuff on my docket for the next 6 months. At some point I go to P-Town for, 4th of July every year for a week, and I take that week off. My brother comes and hangs out with me. I look forward to that week every year. So, I am looking forward to a little bit of downtime.
All right. And that is Boston restaurateur and winner of season 3 of Tournament of Champions on the Food Network, Tiffany Faison. Tiffany, thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for having me.
And that is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Chris Siderick, Amanda Beeland, and Sydney Bowles, with Francisca Monahan and Sarah Leeson. Marquise Neal is our technical director. Karen Schiffman is our interim executive producer. I'm Tiziana Deering. So glad you tuned in today. How about you do it again tomorrow for more Radio Boston?